president today broke a promise to 800,000 young individuals.
Anchorage residents protest the Trump administration's decision to end protections for dreamers. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, September 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the state joins a national legal fight over redistricting, but not without criticism.
Unless you are in the middle of it and you understand all sides of it, I don't think it's reasonable for us to get involved.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaskans and in the 40 years of Alaska operations. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. Didn't quite catch that report. Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at AlaskaPublic.org.
Alaska Attorney General Jana Lindemuth joined a legal brief in a U.S. Supreme Court case today, arguing that redistricting shouldn't favor one political party. Oregon Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum filed the amicus brief. Lindemuth and 16 other attorneys general joined it. The brief argues that a Wisconsin redistricting plan was too partisan. Department of Law spokeswoman Corey Mills says Lindemuth supported drawing a line on when partisan redistricting, known as gerrymandering, becomes unconstitutional.
The brief concludes that Wisconsin's plan should be deemed unconstitutional.
Governor Bill Walker supports the move. He said in a statement, quote, drawing district lines only to maximize one political party's power without any other reasonable justification is a disservice to the voters and to democracy, end quote. But at least one member of the board in charge of Alaska's most recent redistricting disagreed. Juneau resident Peggy Ann McConaughey says Alaska shouldn't weigh in on what Wisconsin did.
Every state has its own way of doing it unless you are in the middle of it and you understand all sides of it. I don't think it's reasonable for us to get involved.
The brief argues that advances in technology have made it easier to have extreme partisan redistricting that insulate political parties from attempts to unseat them. The case, Gill versus Whitford, will be argued on October 3rd. Today, the Trump administration announced it would end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, or DACA. The Obama-era program protects undocumented immigrants who came to the U.S. as children, shielding them from deportation and allowing them to obtain work permits. As Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, about 100 protesters gathered in downtown Anchorage to oppose the decision.
The protest was organized by the left-leaning group Indivisible Anchorage, which is part of a network of groups that popped up to oppose President Trump's agenda. Shoshana Stone is one of the organizers. She says for many DACA recipients, living in the U.S. is all they can remember.
They've been here, living, working, going to school, and, this is just a wrong.
There are fewer than 150 DACA recipients in Alaska, according to the Center for American Progress, out of about 800,000 nationwide. Earlier this year, President Trump told ABC News that these people, known as Dreamers, quote, shouldn't be very worried about deportation. Anchorage Assemblymember Felix Rivera is among the protesters who say Trump is being unfaithful to his word.
The president today broke a promise to 800,000 young individuals who by all rights are Americans, they just don't have that piece of paper.
That sentiment was echoed by Leah McDermott, an Anchorage immigration attorney. She says anticipation of the president's decision rushed several of her clients to renew their DACA permits. She even had one client filed last week, right under the wire.
We didn't know exactly what would happen, but we knew that something could be announced today, and so I definitely wanted to get it filed before that happened.
The Department of Homeland Security will not process any new permits going forward. But McDermott says the president's decision doesn't mean that Dreamers will be immediately deported.
A lot of people with DACA have other options for staying legally in the country, and they may not be aware of that. So my advice to them would be to consult with an immigration attorney and find out if they have other options available.
Current DACA recipients can hang on to their two-year work permits until they expire. After that, the program is in the hands of Congress. The Trump administration is delaying fully ending the program until March 2018. The president said that gives lawmakers 6 months to pass new legislation if they want to protect Dreamers. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Anchorage District Attorney Clint Campion announced last week that he's stepping down from his post. Campion has been the DA for a little over 2 years and with the Department of Law for 9 years and says he's moving to the private sector. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
Campion submitted his resignation Friday, asking for an effective date of October 6th to allow the department time to tap his successor. He says he's accepted a job with Anchorage-based law firm Sador, Wentland, Evans, and Phillippe.
I've been presented with a really good opportunity in the private sector. I've gotten to know the people at the firm, and I think it's a good opportunity for me personally and professionally, and I just wanted to take advantage of the opportunity while it was there.
Campion has prosecuted some high-profile cases in his time, and for the past 2 years has guided the strategy for the state criminal cases in Anchorage, Bristol Bay, and the Aleutians. He says he is proud of the work that his staff has been doing and the new hires that are coming on board. He acknowledges that recent budget cuts have made prosecutors' work more challenging, as has Senate Bill 91.
It's changed the landscape, and I don't think the verdict is back yet about how effective the bill has been. And so I guess I'll take a wait-and-see approach when it comes to Senate Bill 91. But those things were not the reasons I'm leaving. I'm not leaving because I'm frustrated or that I'm unhappy with the administration. The administration has been really good to me personally. I think they're really are recognizing the hard work of the Anchorage DA's office and they're providing the support that we need.
As he prepares to leave, Campion says he's particularly glad that the Dillingham DA's office has stayed open and staffed. And he's also proud to see that Gustav Olofsson was promoted from the Anchorage office to take over as Kodiak DA. District attorneys ultimately decide what charges get brought against a person, which cases get deals or go to trial, and which get dismissed. It's all in pursuit of justice, and Campion says that's certainly part of what he'll miss about the job.
You know, obviously seeking justice is the primary focus, but it's what's just as important as explaining those decisions and sticking by your decisions. And in the face of public scrutiny or unhappiness with certain segments of the criminal justice system, we've been able to stick by our decisions and explain them, and I guess that would be a proud part of my reign as DA.
Campion says he's excited to branch out professionally into a new realm of law and litigation and personally to spend more time with his family. The Department of Law has not yet named his replacement. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, South Central braces for its first big fall storm.
Right now, it's looking like winds in the 75 to 80 mile an hour range up in the Turnagain Arm and upper hillside.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. And by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Early this morning, a landslide crashed into Skagway's largest cruise ship dock. It was the second slide event in less than 2 weeks and caused a pair of cruise ships to divert to other ports. Some Skagway residents are calling on the city and the private company that owns the dock to take action. KHNS's Emily Files reports.
Retired fisherman Craig McCormick was sleeping in his charter boat in the Skagway Harbor when a sound woke him up at about 3 a.m. Tuesday.
I could hear and kind of feel the slide above the railroad dock coming down, and I kind of rolled over, and then it came down again. I don't know what time that was, 5:30-ish.
A steep cliff prone to slides neighbors the boat harbor and Skagway's biggest cruise ship dock.
The one later in the morning sounded like kind of like a waterfall.
More than an inch of rain fell in Skagway the day before the September 5th rockfall. This slide follows one on August 26th. As a safety precaution, White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad shut the dock down. White Pass is Skagway's largest tour company, and it owns the railroad dock. White Pass official Tyler Rose says the September 5th slide was bigger than the one in August.
Obviously thankful, you know, nobody's injured. You know, we're assessing the area, the damage.
Rose says the damage this time was a bit more extensive. A railing was damaged along with a water main. After the August slide, White Pass had a geotechnical engineer assess the site. Rose told KHNS at the time that the dock was deemed safe to continue accepting ships the next day. Rose declined to provide more information about the August engineer report or what the assessment entails. This time around, the city of Skagway will be conducting its own evaluation.
Well, it's something we need to look at in more detail.
Skagway Borough Manager Scott Hahn says he decided late last week to hire a geotechnical engineer to assess the area for the city. Initially, he was going to wait for direction from the assembly, but Hahn says he decided to go ahead and contract with PND engineers instead of waiting for the next assembly meeting. This second slide just happened to take place the same day the engineer was due to arrive in town.
We need to assess the risk to the dock and the public on the whole hillside. So, I'm just going to wait and see what our engineers come up with and go with our best estimates.
Even though White Pass owns the railroad dock, Hahn says the cliff where the slides keep occurring is city land.
So why has it been White Pass that's been dealing with the landslides there?
I don't know how it was established that they do that. I don't know if it's their liability or our liability, but I'm looking at that issue as well.
The assembly is set to talk about the rock slides at its next meeting. This most recent slide happened at an inconvenient time for Skagway's tourism industry. The town had no dock space available after the railroad dock was closed, so two ships were diverted to other ports. The Celebrity Solstice sailed to Icy Strait, and the Star Princess went to Haines. Jerry Seals is from North Carolina. He was on the Star Princess, which made the unexpected port call in Haines.
We had an excursion in Skagway, gold mining, dog sled. That's all been canceled. So.
Seals was one of dozens lined up to try to make it to Skagway on a fast ferry shuttle.
So whoever has reservations can just come up front.
But the economic toll of the ship diversion isn't the main thing worrying some Skagway residents. Many spoke out on Facebook Tuesday. They called on White Pass and the city to take action before a slide harms more than the cruise ship calendar. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
The slide in Skagway this morning came a day after a similar event in Sitka yesterday. A landslide occurred early Monday afternoon in Sitka and stranded people on either end of the road system for about 8 hours. But otherwise, there were no reports of damage or injuries. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The slide happened at around noon on Labor Day along Halibut Point Road, Sitka's only northbound highway connecting downtown to the Deepwater cruise ship dock and the state ferry terminal. Sitka Fire Chief Dave Miller was one of the first on scene.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty impressive. You know, a hillside came down maybe, 200 feet in elevation down to the road level, and then it's maybe 100 to 150 feet wide. So it was a pretty good piece of earth that came down.
The Sitka Electric Department cut power along the highway while crews worked to clear debris, some of which was pushed against poles supporting the main electrical transmission lines, which had shorted out. Emergency shelters were available at both the Sitka Sportsmen's Association indoor shooting range and at the state ferry terminal. However, few took advantage of them. Ferry passengers instead lined up in their vehicles on the roadway to wait while the slide was cleared. Passengers aboard the Seven Seas Mariner were shuttled to their ship aboard private tour vessels operated by Allen Marine. The Marine Highway scheduled an additional sailing of the Fairweather on Tuesday to accommodate passengers unable to reach the ferry terminal. Although inconvenient, the slide is small relative to the Kramer Avenue slide in August 2015, which killed 3 people in Sitka. Fire Chief Miller says there's really no comparison.
5 or 6 hours and we're done cleaning it up where Kramer Avenue was days and days and days of just cleanup.
Nevertheless, slides of any size can be hazardous. A slightly smaller slide in 2005, also along Halibut Point Road, demolished a vacant state maintenance building. After a beautiful weekend of sunshine, Sitka received over 2 inches of rain between 4 a.m. and 10 a.m. Monday morning. More rain is expected later in the week. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The season's first serious fall storm is descending on south-central Alaska, bringing rain and strong winds to the Gulf of Alaska all the way up to the Mat-Su Borough. Eddie Zingowney is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service and says the storm will barrel through the region overnight.
Right now, it's looking like winds in the 75 to 80 mile an hour range up in the Turnagain Arm and upper hillside, maybe the 50, 60 mile an hour range in the lower hillside, and then 35 to 45 are possible over the rest of Anchorage.
These are the strongest winds in the area since last winter. Zingowney says the arrival of a storm this size at the start of September is normal, and in fact, this one falls within a day of a destructive storm 5 years ago that toppled trees and knocked out power across Anchorage, closing schools, offices, and roads. Zingowney says with leaves still on the trees, there's the risk of power lines being damaged, but with heavy winds this time of year, the biggest safety concern is a lack of preparation.
We are still very much in summertime mode here in South Central Alaska. We have the lawn chairs are out and there's garden plants growing it. And things can get damaged that normally would be put away or covered in snow during the wintertime.
The fast-moving storm is not expected to cause any significant flooding. Areas along the northern Gulf of Alaska and eastern edge of the Kenai Peninsula are expected to start seeing the first strong effects of the storm overnight. The system is forecast to move northwest, tapering off throughout Wednesday morning. The Russian River in Kodiak flooded last week, leaving some residents scrambling to address the damage. KMXT's Mitch Borden has the story.
Larry Evans woke up in the middle of the night and thought he should throw another log into his wood stove. But when he walked downstairs, he found a surprise.
Flipped on the light and got to the landing and everything was floating. I just got tears in my eyes. I didn't know what, memories, everything was floating.
The entire first floor of his house was underwater. He acted fast. Evans and one of his sons got a pump going and did whatever they could to salvage their belongings. The water did finally recede, but even days later, Evans can still see signs of flooding in his yard.
Yeah, you can see all the grass is laid flat all through here, like a river ran through here, because it did.
The Russian River runs behind his house, but Evans says it's never flooded like this before. He's also surprised by the amount of rain it took to raise it. The National Weather Service estimates Kodiak got over 2 inches of rain during the week of the flooding. Upstream is where the water breached the riverbank and created a channel that shot towards Evans and his family. Andrew Finke lives near where this happened. He says the river's path has changed over the last year, which makes it flood more often.
That didn't used to affect anybody's property, but with the way the channel has changed, it's flooding in a different way.
This makes Finke nervous.
It could start flooding through people's septic tanks, which could then cause, you know, people's wells to be contaminated. We're standing on Lita Street here. It's been eroding away. I would guess we lost probably another 4 feet of it.
Finke and other concerned residents showed up at a recent Kodiak Island Borough Assembly work session and asked for help. The borough manager, Michael Powers, said they're monitoring the situation, but its options are limited. Back at Larry Evans' house, fans are running nonstop. He's walking through, pointing out what he's done so far. The water was a foot deep, so there's a lot of work to do.
This is how I started. It was soaked all the way up to here. I'm trying to get it as dry as possible.
He doesn't want mold to grow, so he's ripping out all the affected carpet, drywall, and insulation. Evans thinks the damages will be in the thousands, but he feels like the community is rallying around him.
All I could think about that night was, what am I going to do, you know? And, today, I got some kind of hope anyway.
Evan says some good Samaritan dumped a load of gravel in front of where the river flooded, so hopefully that will protect his house for now. In Kodiak, I'm Mitch Borden.
Hunters and others with plans to travel the Denali Highway this coming weekend are being advised about overnight closures due to road work. A release from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game says the road will be closed near mile 131, about 4 miles from Cantwell, from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., September 9th, 10th, and 11th. Fish and Game notes more than 14,000 permits have been issued for various Nelchina caribou hunts accessed from the Denali Highway. The State Department of Transportation says this weekend's 12-hour closures are to facilitate work to improve drainage and help protect the road and bridges from flood damage.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. Boating accidents happen, even to experienced boaters and on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make those you care about promise to be rescue ready by always wearing a life jacket when in an open boat or on deck, attaching the engine cutoff device when underway, and carrying emergency communication and distress signaling devices on their person. Visit pledgetolive.org for more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Some animals were left to waste in last week's 40-mile caribou hunt along the Steese Highway. An Alaska State Trooper dispatch says 18 animals, 15 cows, and 3 bulls were shot and left, with more reports coming in. It says several hunters helped wildlife troopers salvage meat for donation to charity. Troopers note that the harvest was rapid during the 2-day hunt, adding that while most hunters obeyed regulations, more than 50 citations were issued for a range of offenses. As millions of people around the world are displaced from their homes, some are looking to the past for insight on the refugee crisis. A new museum exhibit in Anchorage tells the story of a plan to relocate European Jewish refugees to Alaska during World War II. Alaska Public Media's Henry Leisha went to learn about a resettlement effort that almost was.
Although the 49th state isn't exactly a hub of Jewish culture, Rabbi Joseph Greenberg, president of the Alaska Jewish Museum, says there were many Jewish families who were instrumental in making the state what it is today.
The first mayor of Anchorage was Jewish, and then we had one of the most famous mayors of Anchorage, which is Mr. Lusak. The Lusak Library is named after him, who actually created the first foundation of charity for education ever in Alaska.
In the early days of World War II, people saw the rising number of Jewish refugees fleeing Nazi-occupied Europe as a development opportunity for the territory. The thinking was that there would be plenty of room for new arrivals, and refugees could help create year-round industry. The idea first came from Secretary of Interior Harold Ickes. He commissioned a feasibility study for what became called the Alaska Development Plan. Exhibit curator Leslie Freed says news of the plan quickly spread to Jews across the Atlantic.
They knew about this plan. That was what was so amazing to me, discovering that some of these people had copies of the report. They also had information for prospective settlers, a little brochure.
The Interior Department started receiving letters from Jewish people making the case for their entry into Alaska. Although a bill was drafted to carry out the plan, it never made it through the U.S. Congress.
So people can open up this cabinet and look in, and you've got a bunch of the letters from Bruno Rosenthal from Neustadt, Germany.
The layout of the exhibit serves as a metaphor for the failed endeavor. Fried says it is modeled after the MS St. Louis, a German ocean liner that carried 900 Jewish refugees across the Atlantic, only to be denied entry to Cuba, the U.S., and Canada.
At the end of this little corridor between these curved boat walls, you look towards the end, and I have film pieces of the Alaska Territory around this time period. And I wanted to imagine, I was imagining what people wanting to come to the territory must be thinking about.
According to a survey conducted by Forbes magazine in 1938, most Americans did not want to let Jewish refugees into the country. In addition to widespread anti-Semitism, many feared that communists or Nazi sympathizers could sneak in among the refugees. Although the exhibit describes historical events, Fried sees parallels with what's happening around the world today.
I hope that there is resonance there, that people will connect the dots and see that the trials and tribulations that are described in some of our narrative panels really are universal.
The exhibit, A Refuge in the Last Frontier, is on display now at the Alaska Jewish Museum. In Anchorage, I'm Henry Leisha.
An initiative to conserve one coastal habitat in the Kodiak Archipelago is now complete. The Thorsheim drainage on Afognak Island includes almost 2,000 acres of natural habitat. It's now safe from development and tree harvest. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has more.
The executive director of the organization that mediated the agreement, Ellen Kazari, with the Great Land Trust, says the parcel includes nearly the entire watershed.
So it has just that whole variety then of fisheries habitat. So in that area, you find three species of salmon. Right off the coastline, we have continuous kelp beds and eelgrass, which is a great kind of spawning habitat for juvenile fish. And while the salmon and the fisheries are one of our priorities, we also have Dolly Varden and steelhead and Arctic char, so it's just rich with fish.
This conservation effort traces its roots back to the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill. After that catastrophe, the Exxon Valdez oil spill trustee council put funds from a civil settlement into helping the damaged habitats recover. That's where the Great Land Trust comes in. Kazari says part of the council's efforts includes commissioning the nonprofit to find valuable coastline habitats and mediate agreements to protect them.
This particular piece of property was scheduled to be logged in 2017 and 2018. By putting it into conservation, it means that it will no longer be logged now or in the future. So it's retiring those rights to subdivide or develop or log or clear cut or whatever other development actions could happen on the property.
UAC Natives Incorporated had owned the Thorsheim drainage parcel. They had also sold logging rights on that land to a company called Transpac Alaska Limited Partnership. With funding from the trustee council, the Great Land Trust arranged for the transfer of ownership to the state of Alaska and the handover of the conservation easement, or development rights, to the Bureau of Land Management. In return, UAC and Transpac split a total of about $6.3 million between them. UAC president and CEO Gabe McKillie says the corporation had tried and failed before to conserve the land, and he's satisfied with this most recent development.
I think it was a fair price to us and a fair price to the state in what they got in return. This is very unique land. It's got a value that you really can't place a number on.
The Fognak Island parcel is just one of the Kodiak properties the Great Land Trust has identified for conservation. This year, the organization finalized a similar conservation easement transfer for Termination Point, a popular hiking spot. In Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Dave Benninger in Dillingham, Emily Files in Skagway, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Zachariah Hughes and Henry Leisha in Anchorage, Mitch Borden and Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Family Education Loan so parents, a spouse, or grandparents can help students with the cost of college or training programs in or outside of Alaska. Interest rates are lower than the Federal Plus, and no credit is required. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.